woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, just over on the board. S&P futures down 250. Dow futures up 21. NASDAQ futures down 24. So we're kind of a flat. Mr. Kevin, are you with us, bud?
Physically, yes. In spirit, occasionally.
Well, yeah, that's the way the world is now. It's an odd thing. At least you didn't get caught. Although everything has its interesting pieces to it. Last night I had a big power business meeting over at the Tripoli. People met there. And, of course, my buddy, I end up with down the block, my attorney friend decides he's going to make it before the rain. Well, let's just say the timing wasn't so hot. And so we leave the place, make it about 30 feet. I'm saying I'm ducking under the awning. And it was like, I mean, you could have been in the shower and not gotten as wet. And so it just happens to be a place where people, well, I guess guys go there too, but it's a big, really fancy beauty salon, right? And, Manny, how many people do you think they have in there? People doing hair, like 20?
They have, like, I would say at least 20 chairs, if not more.
And so watch all the people coming out of there just getting their hair done. We'll go to about 5 feet and have it all be wet again.
Oh, that couldn't have been good.
No, if you could not have been.
Do they give you a redo ticket like the car washes do?
But it came down so hard that in front of the place, I didn't realize it must be on like a low spot on the block or something. The curb to the street filled up with water to where it was so deep, and everybody's got all these ladies got the Ubers coming by and getting them, and they're yelling at the Uber guy, "Move over there! There's like a puddle here and stuff." So finally, one lady walks out, and she's got the flip-flops, and she just landed in the puddle up to her ankle. I guess that's why you wear flip-flops. So I don't know. But even though it was pretty miserable standing there, was at least I got a little bit of a show with someone in trip. But, God, was it raining. And the Cubs kicked the fans out of the stadium before they stopped the play. I've never seen that before. Have you, Benny?
Well, they did that last night?
Yeah.
No, I knew they did that the night before because there was a tornado warning, and I think that's like their policy. But, yeah, I didn't see that last night.
Yeah, the same thing. I mean, I'm sitting there going, I know they're bad, but they must have a couple of fans. There's nobody there. I looked at it. It turned out they kicked everybody out before, and then like 2 minutes later.
There was a lot of lightning, I think, that probably as well.
Yeah. It was miserable. And I don't know if it could rain much harder. It looked like something you'd see in a hurricane. And I don't know how many inches.
We didn't get anything near compared to what the suburbs has gotten the last couple of days.
Yeah, well, I'd explain.
2 days ago, they had the tornadoes, which, of course, didn't make it to the city. And then yesterday, a big chunk of the suburbs lost their power, which didn't make it to the city either.
Audrey said a big hunk of a tree flew over her house and luckily missed it. Wasn't like a big, huge
Did it hit her neighbor's house? Or did
no,
it
just landed like on the street or front lawn or something. So that was somewhat interesting. I have a couple of interesting questions for you, Mavens. Now that I'm getting all these baseball trivia things, some of them lead you to other stories. I don't know. Boy, you guys might get this, but I didn't come close. What is the largest U.S. city without a Major League Baseball team?
Well, until the White Sox got good lately, I would have said Chicago. But
I would guess...
Let me see. Largest Major League city without a baseball...
And then it goes back to the history of this, and the history of this is pretty interesting.
Is Is San Antonio in there in that conversation?
Uh-huh. See what I mean? You guys, I would have guessed like Indianapolis or something. It is
Indianapolis is not big.
It is since they made the place, they annexed all the property around them.
Yeah, it's not big though compared to like
San Antonio.
It's big in square miles.
I thought Oklahoma City had some people in it too.
Oklahoma City is growing, but San Antonio is like a top 10 city in population, I believe.
So in other words, you are correct. It is San Antonio, and I would not have guessed that, but it is San Antonio. At the turn of the 20th century, what would be the answer?
The turn of the 20th century. Oh my goodness, I don't know. Los Angeles, is it? Probably not.
Baltimore.
It wouldn't have been that big then.
Baltimore.
Oh wow.
Baltimore.
And I didn't realize that the Orioles dropped. The modern Orioles did not arrive from St. Louis until 1954. It was a
American Browns, yeah.
Well, the St. Louis Browns, they moved to Baltimore. I didn't know that. Okay. And somewhere, yeah,
my grandfather was who lived in St. Louis, who was a Browns fan.
Oh, all right. That's interesting. So sometimes in the 1920s, Los Angeles overtook it, which we all would have guessed, as the largest city without a team. When the Dodgers moved from New York City to L.A., then it left Houston as the largest city. But then Houston got a team in 1962, which left Dallas as the largest city. Well, then they got there. The Washington Senators became the Texas Rangers. It says here, which I assigned to Dallas, even though they never played within the Dallas city limits.
Right, still haven't.
Yeah. So that left Washington as the largest city without an MLB team. Then sometime in the 70s, Phoenix overtook Washington in population and inherited the title. Then in 1998, the expansion Arizona Diamondbacks began playing Phoenix, leaving San Antonio as the largest city without an MLB team. A title they hold to this day, so Manny Weber gets the fish or whatever.
They don't have a hockey team or a football team either.
That's kind of do they
all they have is basketball, and yet they've become a gigantic city.
But do they want one?
I would assume every city wants that.
I don't know. Some LA doesn't really.
Well, I mean, LA does and doesn't. Right now, LA's got two football, two basketball, essentially two baseball, and essentially two hockey if you count Anaheim.
Yeah, well, I guess.
So LA goes ebbs and flows, right?
Like yeah.
5 years ago, they had no football. Now they've got two of everything.
I'm sort of startled this morning here. Well, I'm not startled. I guess I'm continually that the. Well, of course, the headline here is of course all wrong. Oil rises as market shrugs off virus, and also oil falls then after White House says OPEC should boost production to support the economic recovery. Do you think anybody in the White House is trading this stuff? I mean, is this the new right that you get from when you get in the White House?
Well, here's the thing is we've done things to scale back oil production in this country, and now it's, you know, the OPEC people are supposed to make up the slack.
We
scaled back in for environmental reasons. So it's you guys should screw up your environment if they believe that it's torturous to the environment. Then what they're really saying is you guys scale back.
Well,
you guys screw up your environment.
That's what we do to China. Although I think the
I know we're just such idiots sometimes.
I don't. I'm convinced. I don't know. I'm asking myself and to look in the mirror. Am I getting more knowledgeable? Am I finally seeing things I should have seen the whole time that I've been here? Or am I getting more cynical? Or do they both go together?
I think they go together. Very nicely, by the way.
I can't believe, Kevin. I mean, everybody knows I rant and rave once in a while. I'm sure. If you don't really think about it, people have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. How businesses are being forced to essentially do the censorship or the investigation of people that the government doesn't want to do. Even though there's something, actually, Manny, I don't expect you to remember this. What did I come up with one time? How many people are there in law enforcement in this country? It's like 300,000 or 400. It's an incredible amount of money.
Not less than there were a year ago.
Why is that?
Because so many of the police departments have either had a combination of funding cut, people taking early retirement because they don't like the way the policies of their city's leadership, and just, you know, in general, people not wanting to go into the profession. You know, it's the same reason that you had all of those officers turned their back on Lori Lightfoot.
Well, I was just...
By the way, a Google search says that we now have more than 800,000 sworn law enforcement officers now serving in the United States, which is the highest level ever. About 12% of those are female. That's just at the top of Google if you search how many law enforcement people are in the U.S.
Now, my question is, whenever many of you should know by now that when you help me out like that, it just brings me up to another question. Does that include the 60,000 TSA people?
I'd have to click on this link here and line item it to tell you what that includes.
And I'll bet it does not
Because just in general, the list for federal law enforcement would be interesting to see.
And I'm guessing it does not include private security, does not include like jail guards, that kind of thing. I'm just speculating, but the number is like huge. But I mean, and I don't know why I always do this one, because Kevin, you lead me down this road. I mean, the Gestapo couldn't have operated.
I'm here.
The Gestapo could not have operated without having people calling them up and telling on people. And our people are starting to act just like that. They don't want to actually do any law enforcement. If somebody steals some money out of your account at the bank, you expect the bank to come up with the money because their system wasn't good enough. You don't expect at all law enforcement to actually find the guy who did it. I mean, that's an absolutely that's a fool's thought if you think that they're actually going to give a crap. They're going to say, oh, what's the problem? You got insurance and banks doing it. I mean,
there's an interesting chart here, and again, I'll still look and see what the line items, what quote unquote includes a law enforcement officer. But this chart going back to 2004, so just the last, it goes 2004 to 2019. So back in 2004, there was 675,000 law enforcement. Then it ballooned all the way up to over 700,000 in 2008, 2009. And then it went way down during the I don't know if this is coincidence or what, but during the first 4 years of the Obama administration, it went from nearly 710,000 all the way down to a 20-year low of 625,000. And then since 2014, it's gone up every year incrementally until now it's at 800,000, which is an all-time high. So I don't remember what happened in 2012 to 2015 when it just crashed way down by 200,000 officers, but it's on the climb back up, and now it's at an all-time high.
Really? Well, I mean, I'm
willing to bet that most of the growth is going to be in federal law enforcement, whether that's TSA or not doesn't really matter to me, because that's where budgets tend to bloat. In there's just a finite amount of budget in cities and in even rural and suburban police forces. There's a finite amount of money, so they can only grow so fast. So if you're seeing rapid growth, almost always when it comes to public money, that tends to be in the federal budget.
Well, I mean, you
so
see
when
a little.
We talk about federal law enforcement. We talk about the FBI and various other. Just in Washington D.C., which is federal budget. You have Capitol Police, you have D.C. Police, you have, there's like three or four different police forces that are just local police forces.
Is D.C. a county? It can't be a county. It's its own thing, right? So it's probably not a county. It's probably just this, whatever it is. I guess I should know this. It's a city, but it's also the territory is part of what? It's a District of Columbia, correct? So there's no counties there, are there, or are there? There's different counties
in
there.
It's just the district.
Well, it's really, the reason why I brought that up with the people policing other people is they Rand Paul, the kid, came out and said, Rand Paul came out and said he doesn't think masks are worth a crap, and so they banned him from YouTube for a week. How the hell does that happen, Kevin?
Say that again? What did he say?
He doesn't think masks are effective. They don't work.
Yeah. And I don't think they work either.
I don't either.
I think they work about as well as a chain-link fence is. They're about as good at stopping aerosol viruses. At least cloth masks are as good at stopping aerosol viruses as a chain-link fence is at stopping a marble.
Now, I would change my view if people did it the way a surgeon does, where every time you don't walk into the next operation with the same mask. I mean, if people were to change it every, make sure it's over your nose, make sure it's tight, and oh, by the way, change it every like hour or two, I guess I'd change my view, but I don't know if anybody in the world ever does that, do they?
No, of course not.
Just, sort of just saying, but it, I guess when we have our, I think, sad as it is, Kevin, I think there was a couple of, more than a couple of smaller police forces 10, 15 years ago that, were forced to cut down on the amount of active policemen because when the people retired, they still had to pay them and they didn't have the money to have somebody new come on. That was a phenomenon for a while. Plus, your buddy, the Republican, governor from Idaho was just on the other day patting himself on the back about how this huge tax cut came through. Right. Well, of course, Idaho just got all this federal money. Every state did. I mean, there's a map here. I can tell you how much your state got. I probably should tee it up here since I just said that. And the stipulation was that you weren't supposed to use the money to cut taxes or to just pound into your pension plan without like fixing it. So that was the alleged stipulation. And I was writing something to one of my clients who actually sent it to me. And I go, I said, you know, anybody who thinks that these people in the state that one piece of money is not the same as another piece of money has never had an accounting class in their life, and you know, I don't usually say this often, is a friggin' moron. I mean, if you think for a second that the money from the lotto goes right to schools, I mean, I don't know how I can even have a conversation with you. It goes into the general fund and they shove it wherever the hell they damn want. I mean, am I right or not? I mean,
I remember when it first came out because it was definitely going to fix our education funding issues, and it was absolutely directed towards schools. It went right into that account for schools, that GL account. And then other funding out of the general account that went to schools came right out of that GL account.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
The lottery money was directed there. Yes.
Yes, you put it in there and directed there. Then it came right back out. I mean, so what are we doing? I mean, does anybody really think that it makes any, that it wouldn't, that the, if push come to shove, it's going to go to school instead of the governor's paycheck? I mean, come on. I mean, I don't know how people even believe this stuff. And people keep coming up with it like we're supposed to believe it. I just don't even get there.
Q Irwin Mainway, he's the Dan Aykroyd character who used to sell dangerous toys. He'd just sit there and bold-faced lie about it. It was great how he did it.
Yeah, I'm here sitting here looking at the...
Mainway for governor, Mainway for city council. You just go with whatever you want here.
Well, the two biggest states, California, got like 40-some billion. For like 40 billion. Texas was second. There's like a big chart here that you can... it doesn't seem to make any difference in the people who voted for Trump or voted for Biden. They all got money. I don't ever even recall. I mean, this is a bizarre world. I mean, I'm gonna flash back 15 years. If you would have looked at any kind of a chart, whatever it was, and how much states got money or something, I don't ever remember it being delineated by who voted for the president the last time. Did you? I mean, did Trump start all this? That he wasn't gonna help states that?
No,
he didn't. I mean, where did it become something? I'm not talking about doing it, you know, under the covers. I'm talking about when did you actually feel that? No, that state didn't vote for him. When did somebody was the first guy to actually mouth that? I think it might have been Trump. I'm not saying it's the first time it ever happened.
Might have been. Well, Trump never had the sense to keep his mouth shut about things.
But I just up until age maybe 45, I never even dreamed anybody would be that. I mean, I get the part where if you're the party in power in Congress, you're going to end up with a better expressway maybe than the other guy. I mean, I sort of get that part. Matter of fact, funny story. I was driving my old pickup truck, which I should have hung on to because it's worth three times more than when I sold it 8 years ago. I'm driving across New Mexico on 40, you know, the old 66, and it's all, you can see it was asphalt that had been, you know, what do they call it? reskinned and redone a few times, but it was wobbling, was made, sort of needing it again. And the minute you turn over into Texas, it's all brand new concrete, like it was finished the week before, absolutely spotless, like you could eat off it. And I'm sitting there going, and Obama had just been elected. That's how long ago this was. Obama had just been elected, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm not sure he's going to be a star, but if every interstate in Illinois looks like this after 8 years, like Bush, I go, maybe it's worth it to have an Illinois governor. It didn't. But I immediately thought, hey, at least if he's a good president, Illinois will have nothing but really nice roads and don't have to worry about any more flat tires, but that didn't happen. Good admitting. But no, I mean, it was incredible. As soon as you went on 40 from New Mexico to Texas, it was like you were in a new world. How new the thing was and everything, with all the grooves in it for the water and all bit.
Well, some of that, though, is just because of, you know, what's the local budget like and what are the local budget priorities.
Oh, I know.
So a certain amount of that, obviously, is federal money that goes towards it, but there's also stuff that comes out of the state budget. And, yeah, some states just, you know, I mean, just look at Illinois' budget, how much state money is going to roads. Well, you know, I suppose if there's a pothole the size of Peoria, they'll get somebody out there to fix it eventually, but they're not out there doing preventative and doing build for the future stuff.
No, and that's what one of the issues I have with this infrastructure program. It's just fixing stuff you should already been fixed. That's not
it isn't even doing that, Tom. We're spending over $1 trillion and less than 20% of it is for roads, bridges. Internet, you know, internet bandwidth, and you know, maybe one or two other items that are important that you would really call infrastructure, and the rest is not, you know, is all for agenda projects.
Yeah, I've not heard of a big huge. I mean, I guess I don't know. I guess it's findable someplace, Kevin, but. It's not like when you used to have Time or Newsweek every week that you read them and they would give you a list of like the 20 worst pork barrel projects in there, like the Bridge to Nowhere and stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody who's doing research on it, but
it's out there. I'd have to pull it up again, but I've seen it. I mean, it's like, you know, I want to say 110 million, but I might be a little low. But I know it's not 200 billion, a billion, not million. It's not 200 billion of it for roads and bridges, as an example. It's more like 110, 120 million, something, or a billion, something like that.
Well,
I wanted to say million because that seems like a big number to me, but I guess it's not in terms of the government.
Well, you end up with, I don't get the population understand. You know, why do we continue to believe what people tell you when it's obviously not there? I was with a couple of people last night, and they were, you know, they drop into the part about, you know, people getting paid to stay at home, and that's why nobody can get anybody to work for them. And I said, well, you know, there's part of that. And I said, but there also has been no discipline and no audit that I know of. Again, if anybody says I feel something different, please. This PPP stuff, if you look at these places that got all this money, I don't believe there was ever any requirement, Kevin. In other words, say PTI Securities had 50 people. I mean, we don't. But if we did, and we got the PPP, which we got a little bit of the first one, we couldn't qualify for the second one. So we basically got nothing from it, even though the city was shut down and we couldn't get in our building. I mean, it was pretty awful. We managed to take care of all our clients, and I think it was seamless for them. But surely we couldn't meet a new client for 15 months. I mean, and you need new people. I mean, people die, for God's sake. I mean, how could you even meet anybody? I mean, the restaurants are closed, and you couldn't come to the office. And people didn't want you to go to their house. So, I mean, it was pretty awful for everybody. But the idea that if I would have had 50 people, and if I was a bleep, which I'm not, I could have laid off 40 of them, jacked myself a huge raise, and as long as I paid out 85% of the money I got for salaries, I qualified to have it,
Forgiven.
Because they didn't say whose salaries.
Whose salaries. So the idea that there are restaurants that got $2 million, $1 million, $1.5 million in the PPP program and are whining about not having, they can't hire people, Why? How did you fire him? The government paid for the friggin' money to keep him. So how did you fire him?
Well, and then, you know, which reminds me to bring up the jobs report, because that was kind of interesting, too. The states that discontinued the enhanced unemployment all of a sudden had the biggest spikes in employment. Duh.
Yeah, well, I mean...
And a lot of that has found its way into the places that have been struggling, like hospitality, as an example. That the those are where the big spikes in employment showed up.
But I think that there's a million pieces to every puzzle. I mean, and it astounds me in the world of we're supposed to get all this information, right? Which I don't know if we are getting much information. It's real. It's untainted.
But, we get data, not information.
Yeah, we get something. But I mean, the idea that you're going to call somebody with we're going to get the CPI numbers, I think, today. I'll go over that on Traffic Weather Sports. But the idea that you're going to call somebody a year ago when you've gotten money to keep them and expect that guy or that girl to be sitting on the sofa waiting patiently for your call after 16 months to come back to a $10 an hour job. I mean really, Kevin, how stupid would that person have to be? Not realizing that the tolls have gone up, the gas has gone up. Oh, by the way, the price of a used car has gone up 3 times. Do they honestly think we'll make it $11.50? That should do it. No, it won't. No, it won't. I don't. People's perspective on what other people should expect and what you think is right for you. Does that gap appear to be growing for me? I mean, if I listen to one more announcer on CNBC making $1 million a year tell me how somebody deserves to go back and work for somebody for $10 an hour, I think I'm going to become Elvis and start shooting the TV or something if I had a gun.
No, I don't think that's the case, Tom. But I also think that when, you know, that should be left to, to the job market. And when people say no, then you have to bid up the price.
Right.
The problem is that, you know, we incentivize not working to 11 versus 12 versus 13, but more to that 10 or 11 versus 17 or 18.
Which it probably should have been all along.
Well, I don't know if it should have been that all along or not, but the fact is it wasn't. And now that it's not incentivized, people are going back to work for those same wages. Is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. But you know, there are higher wage jobs, and there are a lot of people who are training for higher wage jobs. So I can speak to Indiana because I see those numbers all the time, and their issues are in the higher wage jobs, is getting enough qualified people to fill the jobs that that employers are demanding. And it's not because we have a lack of hospitality workers. It's because we have a lack of people who can work with robotics, construction workers, et cetera, you know, the jobs that pay really well.
All right, but Kevin, you're part of the solution here, okay? But I'm saying the same person that came to your place a year ago in March is now qualified for the 20 or 25-hour job. The phone rings to go back to washing dishes. He's saying no. It's not because he's got unemployment. It's because he did something else and trained himself. There's a lot of
right.
that going
but
on
the
too.
The fact is that's not what they have to do.
Well, here we got a dash.
What you're seeing is the people who get the training are qualified. And again, Indiana. I can speak for Indiana. I don't know what Illinois is like. I don't know what other states are.
Illinois is not like that at all.
In Indiana, they're paying for people to be trained in those high wage jobs.
Well,
the state is paying the whole freight.
Well, that's a good thing. S&P futures down 5, NASDAQ futures down 32. Very slow this morning. We were slow yesterday. We got the CPI today, PPI tomorrow. I'll try and get the estimates. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Maddie, you caught me a hair early here because I was digging through. I've got the economic calendar, which has the median CPI for this month at 0.5%. Last month, remember, it was 0.9%, which caused a little shockwave. However, last month, not that I'm saying anything nasty about their study here, but I was looking at last month, the increase, I was actually shoved at a spot by Mr. Siegel on CNBC, and it, I think they had residents, they didn't even have any increase last month in the home rent and owner's equivalent rent. In other words, your cost of housing went up like zero. And they claimed that all they did was blame it on used cars. You know what? Give me a break. They got rent of shelter at 2.6% year over year. You know, come on, really? Anyway, we'll talk about that more tomorrow after these numbers have come out. Yeah, now I gotta go back to my regular page. S&P futures are down 5.25, NASDAQ futures are down 33, and I will find my... Manny, why don't you traffic weather sports? I'm something for the page I just lost.
I can do that. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're looking pretty good so far on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower. We have some traffic building on the Stevenson, especially near Cicero there by the airport. But no accidents to report. Southside expressways are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. Looks like we have two issues in the northwest suburbs. First, in Schaumburg, there are some traffic signals flashing red. They were dealing with all kinds of power outages last night in the northwestern suburbs. Still some traffic signals flashing red in Schaumburg at Plum Grove Road and Higgins. Higgins, of course, a busy road out there. And then just west in Elgin, there's a crash at Lake Street and Lambert Lane as well. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds early. Then we'll get some sunshine, and we'll be hot and steamy again this afternoon, similar to yesterday before the rains came. We'll reach a partly cloudy and humid high of 90 today. Right now it's overcast and 76 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, more rain in the forecast for the second straight day and a high of 95. Right now it's mostly clear and 81. In sports, not a good night for our baseball teams last night. White Sox dropped one in Minnesota, blowing a 3-2 lead and losing to the Twins 4-3. Cubs were swept in a day-night doubleheader versus Milwaukee. Cubs briefly had leads in both games, couldn't hold on, and couldn't score enough runs. And they lost Game 1 4-2 and the nightcap 6-3 after a 90-minute rain delay. Diamondbacks were topped by the Giants 8-7. And in sad news, Blackhawks legend and NHL Hall of Famer Tony Esposito passed away from pancreatic cancer. He was 78 years old. Of course, he was elected into the Hall of Fame in 1988. He was a Rookie of the Year, and I believe he won NHL's Top Goalie Award three different times, Chief. Talk about
well, there's
a
record. His amount of shutouts in 1 year, I'm going to say that's an untouchable record.
Yeah. Tony O, dead at 78.
You know who we didn't mention the other day was Marky Post, the lady who was on Night Court forever, and she also did a lot of stuff on Chicago PD. And she was the Scott Benjamin, who's been on the show a couple times to talk about, you know, being acting in that industry.
Yeah,
he played her boyfriend husband on Chicago PD. So she was such a nice lady.
She has to be quite a bit older than he is.
Oh yeah, she's 70. But he said this is like 5 years ago. She's had been battling cancer for a while. But he said at 65 they had to make her up to look older because she still looked great. But she didn't look bad at all. Anyway, Dow futures are up five. We got over in Europe, we've got the DAX up three. We got the CPI has turned into a big number here again. It hasn't been for a long time. It used to be the biggest number back in the 80s, but now it's not. We hope it doesn't come back to being that. Anyway, DAX up three, call that flat. FTSE up 33.5%, CAC round up 15.2%. Of an age, we got the NICAP 182, that's 0.6%. Shanghai up two, let's call that flat. Hang Seng up 54.2. So the Hang Seng has been grinding back up from that horrible week. It still hasn't made it back to the spot, but it's been relentless on the way up here, so it'll get there pretty soon if it keeps doing this. Bonds, 1.37, up another 3 basis points, so it's grinding back up from that 1.18 or so low. The Bund, minus 0.45, again, they were minus 5.1 there, and they're coming back some. Japan up to positive 0.04 from being slightly negative, I'm going to say last Monday. We've got oil. The White House urging, Kevin and I were talking about the OPEC to produce more oil. It's bizarre since we produce a lot here ourselves. I think, Kevin, people have the idea that over there they just drill a hole in the sand and out it pops and there's no environmental price to be had like fracking. I think that's people's impression. And I don't know how they do oil over there. Oil's down 72 cents, 67.57. It was up to a high of like 74. Brent, which is trying to make it to 80, is still below 70 at 69.92. Natural gas unchanged at 408. RBOB down 2 cents at 224. And we've got gold up $6 to 17.37, but really can't get out of its own way. Silver unchanged 23.40. Copper down 2 cents, 432. And we've had the crypto, which has been rocketing. It's back up to, it's 46,000. It was 48 yesterday. It was up 558, but I think it dropped yesterday during the day. So the Bitcoin is 46,050. Matt, you already gave us traffic, weather, sports, so we'll just continue here. The Bitcoin, was there some kind of an outage or a hack yesterday, Kevin, between some outfit? You guys know more about this. Wasn't there, there was an outfit that, specializes in, and if you have Bitcoin and you want to get rid of it and get into one of the other ones, the Litecoin or whatever, they do the transaction for you. Didn't they get a hack yesterday? And then people, I don't know if people lost dough or whatever, but I think they were hacked into. Did you guys hear that story?
I didn't hear it, but I'll believe you.
Yeah, I don't, I guess there's people popping up all over this thing, but I mean, you got to ask yourself, if you're going to have a huge rally in something, be it tulips, whatever, or a stock that's worth nothing, you might as well just have nothing and might have a rally in that, right?
Yeah, it looks like one of the blockchain platforms was hacked, the Poly network, and hackers allegedly were able to steal $600 million worth of cryptocurrencies from that particular exchange.
Now, would that not be traceable? Be traceable? What would your guys' opinion be? Would they be able to find another way?
I need to see the details on that because conceivably, you know, again, as it works with Bitcoin, you don't change anything. You just add a block to the chain. And so somebody had to add a block here. And I don't know. I'd like to see how it was done that might have kept it anonymous.
Because
theoretically, you can't do that.
Theoretically, you can't do a lot of things, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of the big features of blockchain is that it can't be altered. And you have to remember, it's everybody who participates in the ledger gets their own copy of it. All of the participants get their own copies of it. So when you change one, even if you can manage to pull that off and recalculate all the hashes for everything that's involved in there, you still have to get consensus of everybody else who participates in the ledger, and they all have to agree before it's allowed to go forward. So I'm dying to see what's behind this.
Well, do you have any idea how these operations work? I mean, I do spread transactions all day for my clients, where you want to buy a November call and sell a August call or something like that, or put or whatever it is you're doing. You do it as a spread and for one price, which makes it a lot more efficient. And it works pretty well. But now with this sort of thing, if I want to sell my Bitcoin and buy one right next to it is Ethereum. I don't know what those guys do, but I want to buy that. Say, all right, sell me one or the other. Now, do they have to?
Ethereum sounds like something you get when you eat a bad burrito.
Oh, I know, but that's ETHER. It's up $89, Kevin.
I think it's pronounced Ethereum.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it is Ethereum.
Okay.
And I think they're like the second biggest crypto, top three, something like that.
Yeah, and I get in my an order on my screen, they got Bitcoin, Ethereum, XRP, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash, whatever that is. Those are the ones that are across the top here. Anyway, but I mean, do they create a spread, or do they say I'll buy your Bitcoin from you and I'll sell you the one you're looking for, and essentially take a spiff on both sides? That would be, it sounds to me like that transaction would be somewhat cumbersome. Or, I mean, it would be good for the guy who did it, let's put it that way.
I mean, yeah, well, look at it like this. There's three things that are built into it to make it secure. One of them is the consensus I just talked about, where everybody's got a copy, so everybody who's a participant in the ledger has to agree that it's a legitimate transaction. So that's part one. Part two, but that's actually one part last. And there's a whole bunch of the first part is called hashing. And what happens is there's this really complex algorithm where you each block that you add calculates first of all, it has to know the hash of the last block, because that's how they chain together, thus the term blockchain. You have to do that. When you change any little bit of data, you change the hash, and that screws up the whole chain and triggers alarms. So that's part two. There's another thing called proof of work, and proof of work is just a calculation that validates any change that's made, and that's generally done by the platform that that hosts the blockchain. They generally provide the proof of work, but that's again a very, very complex mathematical formula, so that when you actually add a block to a chain, it doesn't take effect immediately. It takes a few minutes at least to do the proof of work calculation. And those three functions all together are what make this secure. That's why I said I'm dying to see how anybody could have gotten away with stealing it, because I'm not saying anything is foolproof, because nothing is foolproof, but I would like to see what they did to make it happen, because it just kind of interests me to see how you'd beat that system.
Maddie, isn't it bizarre how, based on people's history and their history and education and what they do well, Kevin immediately zeroes in on that, which, by the way, is very interesting, Kevin. I didn't know that. But now what I look at is I say, okay, the reason why I do a spread transaction is everything pretty much has a buy price and a sell price. There's a market on everything. So when you look at Bitcoin, and I'm looking at $45,987, for you as a person who owns or wants to buy Bitcoin, that price is only a historical artifact to you. If you want to sell Bitcoin, I doubt you're going to get that price. And if you want to buy some, you're probably going to get that price. You're going to sell a little lower and buy a little higher. That's the way the world works. Okay, so what I'm saying is, now, when I do a spread transaction for my clients, I don't want to say, okay, I want to sell you the November call or the August call and buy the November call, which you want to do for retail, so you want to buy further out. I don't want to buy the November call. I don't care what it is. I'm willing to buy that spread for a buck and a half. I don't want to find out where you are on one, hit the bid, and find out where you are on the other and take the offer, or worse, do one first and hope I can get the other price on the other one. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do it as a spread. So my question is, has this market evolved to where if I go to whoever this place is and want to trade my Bitcoin in for one of these other ones, does he give me the wide-ass Bitcoin thing, and I turn around and I sell that to him, and I say, oh, by the way, I want to buy XRP. Well, here's my price on the other one, and then here's the market, and I pay the offer on that. Can I get a spread price? And the other question I have is, does he go find another person like me who's trading in those things that act as a broker, or is he acting as the agent? Is this guy going to buy the one from me and sell me the other one as an agent, or is he going to find another person and broker the transaction? Which do you think? Am I too deep here?
Yeah, and the answer to that from my perspective is I don't know, because I have very little interest in Bitcoin or in blockchain from a cryptocurrency standpoint. And I have other than the fact that, you know, also built into the blocks, you can have something called smart contracts, which cause activities to happen, like a payment. So that payment is likely to be in cryptocurrency. But other than that, that's more like triggering a bank transaction. Other than that, my interest in it is for supply chain purposes, which is a different application of the same technology, where you're just trying to make sure that you have total transparency all through the blockchain, that everybody is sharing the same data rather than, you know, everybody has their own database and you wind up sending a lot of files back and forth so that people can try and synchronize them, et cetera. You know, I look at it from the efficiency, the supply chain efficiency standpoint and the supply chain transparency standpoint, so that you can know sources of product, et cetera. And, you know, when it comes to cryptocurrency, I don't know. Yeah, you're going to have to get someone on who can explain that to you.
Well, I just always shudder when I get to the point where you're doing a transaction and the person says, this is a good price. By the way, who's on the other side? Well, I am. Oh, okay. I guess I believe it's a good price, but now my question is for who, you or me? So, I mean, that's what happened when the CBOE was invented in 1973. That's what changed a lot, Kevin, is they said, nobody can be a principal and agent in the same stock on the same day. So the idea is your job as a broker was to find the best price for your client from either market makers or somebody else's client. And there's a job for that. And that's all sort of disappeared now with this payment for order flow and other things. So the ruse being put on the population, as long as the broker, commission is free, that no matter what all the other costs that are involved, no matter how high they go, it remains free to you. So if you have, somehow or another, we seem, in this age of information, we seem to be able to blow by people some of the most bizarre, you know, interesting facts that don't seem to make any difference. But I don't see how anybody believes that, but people do. I mean, there's nothing free in this world. I mean, you know, buy one, get one free. Well, that means that they just double the price, right? I mean, come on. I mean, I would hope that people have figured this out, but it appears that some
people have. Well, no, it just means it's on sale.
It's on sale, yeah.
It means when you buy one, get one free on steaks, that they got some lower grade steaks that they want to move.
Or it's the last day on the date where they can sell it or something.
Well,
they're coming up to the sell-by date.
To the supply chain visibility piece that Kevin was talking about, that's become a huge thing, and I didn't know a ton about it, but my wife's company that she started at just about a year ago, that's what they do, is they built a proprietary software as a service, essentially, their whole purpose is providing real-time supply chain visibility to their customers, whether they're ocean or air or train or truck or whatever, because I just learned this in the last year, but the processes for these companies were so antiquated. I mean, they were sending files back and forth, physically calling people to ask where something is, having people actually go outside and walk through a huge, you know, warehouse yard and find a container or something like that. I mean, it was so manual. And her company just came in 5 years ago, and now they're really cranking. And the owner, who's like my age, is like a billionaire already because there was such a niche for this product. And I think they're based on blockchain, or at least a component of their service is based on blockchain. But the idea that you couldn't, when you shipped something, you would basically just cross your fingers and hope that it would come and have no idea where it's at along the way was crazy to me, and that's still going on.
I don't
mind. Yeah, and if it was going by cargo ship, which would take weeks to cross the ocean, you lost track of your product for a matter of weeks.
Exactly.
But even so, you put it on, it gets here. Where is it in the port? It has to be trucked to a rail yard. Where is it then? All of that. But it really gets to, there's a couple of sourcing applications that come into play as well. So one might be, products are commonly sold as fair trade, your fair trade coffee, for example. It's grown ethically, the growers are treated ethically, all of that that goes into it. And there's people who will pay for that. Well, how do you know it isn't just something somebody said it's fair trade and put that on the label? Well, in a blockchain world, you can actually see that back to the source. But the other one is, you can also deal with damage. You can, things like, I think I've shared on here the romaine lettuce example when a couple of years ago when we had to pull all the romaine lettuce off the shelf. If that were, built on blockchain, if that whole inventory tracking and supplier tracking were on blockchain, you'd be able to just go back to the source with contaminated heads of lettuce, determine where that source is, and just pull those off of the shelves. It could be just, it could have been the grower. Could have been a distribution warehouse where it got contaminated, but you could determine where that is, and then you could just deal with those and not pull everything else off the shelves. But the applications, it's doing a lot to clean up the diamond trade because there are so many illegally mined or slave labor mined diamonds. Same thing with cobalt, which goes into cell phones, among other things, mined in many cases in the Congo with slave labor. You can start tracing that, there's so many applications in supply chain for it that make a lot of sense, and it's because it is so hard to in a blockchain world, it is so hard to defraud somebody. There's so much that has to be agreed on.
Why is it? I sound like I'm the old curmudgeon in this, but this stuff is not new. I mean, the idea of being able to put a code on your produce started with the cranberry issue when Kennedy was running for office. I mean, that's when people started putting codes on produce. I mean, they put stripes on the multicolored stripes. If you ever see a really, really old boxcar, it'll have these multicolored stripes where you could identify the boxcar as it went by the readers on the road or on the tracks. I mean, that was in the, I'm going to say in the 60s. How is this new? I mean, when I used to work on the truck.
I preach this all the time. It's not new per se. It's technology enabled. And there's a big difference there because, I could tell you that all, relational databases they could have done in the 1970s. If only we had the processor power, if only storage were cheap enough, and if only we could transfer data quickly enough. But we couldn't then.
Okay.
We didn't have that kind of capability. And so part of it is the ideas for technology have been around forever. But the ability to execute is enabled by technology. And in fact, I'm going to be, it's funny that we're having this conversation because an hour after I get done here, I will be over at Notre Dame meeting with the Simba Chain people and talking about some technology modules for our courses that are blockchain, but also talking about, just brainstorming some ideas for how to infuse technology training into our supply chain program, which I already have totally fleshed out, and so they're going to look at mine and go, "Oh, well, you got this. Never mind."
How does this in some areas? I mean, it sounds terrific, and I think it obviously is a little more efficient. But I was on the truck docks in '75 or '76, and if you had a box in Denver or a pallet or whatever the hell you had, these guys came and picked it up. They brought it to the warehouse. You just stuck it on the overnight truck to Chicago. It got here. They pulled in at 11 o'clock, and it had a, you know, big stack of papers. They'd hand the stack of papers to me. Somebody had sorted them. And I'd take the same box off, and I'd put it in this truck that was going to the south side or this truck on the north side. You got your delivery, and I'm going to say 30 hours. I don't care how many computers you have. You can't get any more efficient than that. I mean, you get more efficient, but you're not going to get your box any faster, I guess what I'm saying, because you still got to drive it here.
The visibility is the key thing.
The truck is going to take whatever the truck takes.
Well, but I mean, these guys, I mean, back and forth to Denver, believe me, these guys know where every bump is and they're behind. But I'm saying it was about as manually as efficient as it could get. Now, I guess if I had a laptop or something where I didn't have to go through the papers, I might have made me, you know, 5 minutes more efficient or something, or maybe you could have got rid of one person in the office, but it really didn't affect the what you were doing much. You still got there at the same time.
See, the issue that, as I understand it, is that you're talking about when things are going well, of course. Yeah, if things are going well, great. The issue is if something's late or if something's missing or if something is delivered to the wrong place, there's real-time visibility that did not exist as recently as like 5 years ago. These supply chain visibility companies are sprouting up everywhere, where they're creating portals where basically everything you're shipping, whether it's parts, whether it's food, whether it's anything, and by any sort of mode of transportation, like Kevin said, you have a big container on a ship that's gone for 3 weeks, and it just goes forever. It would just go into a black hole, and or it would be sitting in yard somewhere, and it would get lost. People wouldn't know where it was. It was a lot of picking up the phone and calling people, Excel spreadsheets going back and forth. And now you can just log into a portal, plug in what you're looking for, and know exactly where it's at, who scanned it, what it's time stamped, where it's coming. If it's sitting somewhere, you know exactly. You can ping that organization in real time. It's just completely
divert it now. If you have to.
Yes, divert it, cancel it, whatever.
Well, I got a UPS shipment a while ago.
Tom, I know you don't shop at Walmart, but if you were to do such a thing, your deliveries, because they use blockchain. First of all, the second something's delivered, I mean, literally within a minute of something being dropped at your doorstep, you get a notification that it was delivered, because that's all triggered as part of,
I'm a
smart contract.
By the way,
but aside from that, just totally aside from that, because you've always been able to do it, it's more real time. But you also can track the truck. You can say, it's five stops away, it's four stops away. If that really has any value to you, you can do that. Now, does it have any value to me? No.
Kevin, I think when I order something, whatever it is, I mean, I'm not trying to be a total Luddite here. What I'm saying is, I think it's pretty neat to be able to track something and know that it was dropped off at my doorstep. I'm not trying to be a moron here. But I also know that I had a UPS shipment. It came to Chicago. The next day, it was in where the hell was it? It was in some city in Wisconsin instead of here. I guess it was nice to know that. But in terms of them telling me it'll be there on Friday and it being there on Friday, it really doesn't matter as long as it gets there on Friday, does it? I mean, I'm saying we it's neat.
To most people, it does not.
Right.
But as Matt said, the minute you have an exception.
Oh, yeah.
To companies relying on one last part to complete something and they have people standing by, it matters to the minute.
Okay, you're saying that if it always shows up on Friday morning and I trust them to be there, I guess I don't have to look 10 minutes before if it's on the way, is what my point is. I mean,
you're talking about a guy getting an Amazon package. Who gives a shit about that? Well, we're talking about companies that are relying on parts to build something, and if one part's missing, then the whole assembly line is at a stall, and they need to know if something is late or exactly where it's going to be so they can work on something else so they don't miss a beat.
Well, I get it. I mean, it's way better. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We can beat this up. The question is, at what cost? But no, I think it's really neat. And the idea for you to know, if you're going to have just-in-time production, you better have just-in-time information.
Right, which is what everyone's doing. And just until very recently, they didn't have that just-in-time supply chain information. And a lot of companies still don't have it. And I didn't know that. It's just fascinating.
Well, let's put it, maybe the part that what I'm saying is if I'm providing doors to Ford and I'm delivering them every single day, and all of a sudden I have a storm like last night and I'm going to be a day late on the doors, I better have picked up the phone. I mean, you know, it's not like you leave the person in a fog because you don't have a computer. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it doesn't really make any difference to him if I call him and say, hey, for the first time in the last 50 days, we're going to be a day late. It doesn't really matter whether he sees it on his computer or I call him. He still gets the information. I mean, I'd rather have him just be able to pick it up. You know what I'm saying? But
hey, I think it's great to know where and when and all of that. I really think it's, you know, the punchlines as much as anything, and it's really important when you're doing a lot of international trade to know where things are. Because then, you can't always pick up the phone. You can't always
even
speak the same language. But I really think it's the transparency, and then it's also things like the smart contract capability. And what is that? You know, that is what happens when this is completed. What happens when something is accepted at the loading dock, for example? And, you know, and the answer is, you know, I think this is going to be a really good thing for the small trucking companies.
And well, the last thing you want to say is
that, because currently what you do is you drop a load off and then everything gets accepted, and then at the end of the month you send out a bill, and you generally will give them 30 days to pay you, and most people will pay on time, so that's fine. But you know, your cash flow is questionable, or can be. It can be difficult for a small company. If on the other hand, in the blockchain world, this all automatically triggers the settlement for the service, then you have you've improved the cash flow of small companies that rely on cash flow.
If
you're a huge trucking company, you don't care. You know, you've got plenty of you probably have plenty of cash on hand and you're not worried about it. But if you're if you're an independent trucker, or if you're a company that's just small and has five trucks, and you do loads, you know, you schedule loads whenever you can, getting paid immediately is a big deal.
Well, that's the truth. Kevin,
I think that aspect of it, that whole kind of, you know, that's a big part of living in the real-time world. And the fact that it's reliable means that you don't have to transmit files. Sure, you could send a bill out the day of, or you could, you could ask for an electronic funds transfer, but you're relying on the source to send you that rather than the consensus.
All right, Kevin, we gotta keep going on this on Friday. We're into poor Russell's time, and he's pissed at you, I'm sure.
Russell hates me already. Okay, you guys have a good day, and I'll talk to you Friday.
All right, SP Futures down 4, and NASDAQ is down 22. We got the CPI number in a half hour. We'll have Russell in a couple minutes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm tonight's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 4, and NASDAQ is down 21. It's before the CPI number, which we have ignored for like a real long time, but now we're sort of watching it. Russell, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I hear that you are being recruited by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and your job is to lie to the population.
I wouldn't be very good at that. I'm honest to a fault sometimes.
But they're going to give you a staff of 30,000 people.
I'd have a hard time fudging the numbers for something like that. Now, I might share them with you ahead of time, but
yes,
that's a different story.
So we're going to give you 30,000 people so you know the second that the price of bread with 2% gluten, not 3 or not 1, goes up two pennies last month. But at the end of the day, you look at all this massive amount of crap they put in front of you, and you say, it's 2.2% when you know it's 1.2. Same.
Beyond, you know, I'm on the, this is the third time in a row that I'm still on my road trip and calling into you guys. And I'm in the middle of the country, stores are, their shelves are bare. I did go to a Walmart while I was in Florida and survived. And I was just kind of amazed at things I couldn't find. I think that's part of the inflation story. I think it's coming not just from like this spike in demand, that, you know, the pent up demand that they talk about since we were locked up for a little over a year, but I think it's on the supply side as well. And then it seems like every time I stopped at the Love's truck stop, which is where I stopped.
Love, L-U-V.
Oh no, those are nice. They're nice.
They are super nice.
Is it? It's an Oklahoma family. They started it. They're, you know, nice, clean, and consistent. They really are.
The only problem I have with them, and I don't have a problem with them. Actually, I like them as well. But if you drove into Michigan, I don't know what the story was with the truckers to Michigan, but there used to be a string of like adult stores that had they had the same name. Didn't they have the same name? I don't think they're there anymore. But they used to have the same name. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the Love truck stops, that's what I thought they were.
No, and God, I wouldn't be, you know, even if I'm honest to a fault, if I stopped at one of those places on my road trip, I would not be telling you.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying that I think there were some on the way to Detroit, and it's the first time I saw the Love truck stops where I had to drive Detroit to see a client, and I thought those things were the same place. I said, God,
they
matched up a gas station with a porn store. What a genius idea. But anyway, right. They're not, obviously.
So, where I was going with the Love's truck stop thing is there's a shortage of people to drive trucks right now. They're making a mint. You see ads on the side of trucks. Everybody's looking for drivers. I Googled it, and there are articles talking about how there's a shortage of people to move things around, or a shortage of people that are willing to take the job and move things around. I don't think there's necessarily a shortage of people. There's just a disconnect between things that need to get done and people that are willing to do them.
Russell, I actually have two places that I frequent from time to time. One is a produce market. Another one, I've been getting some windows for my place. In both places just happen to be, one of them's in the same parking lot, and the other one's right next door, are driver education for trucks. The last five times I've been to these places, the trucking places have been open on Sunday, and there's people that are learning how to drive a truck. I mean, it's not like these schools are pumping people into the system. It's not like the economy hasn't reacted to where they're training a lot of drivers.
Mm-hmm. There's probably a slack in there where, you know, I can't suddenly decide that I'm going to chunk all this academic stuff and go drive a truck around with my dog.
No. Well,
someday sounds really nice.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound terrible.
It doesn't. I think after about a week of sleeping in the back of the truck with my dog, I'd be ready to go back to my academic world.
yeah, and do they still have CB radios anymore?
I doubt it.
How do you talk to the guy next to you? You don't know his phone number.
I mean, maybe they do. Remember, I grew up in the South, but my dad loved having a CB radio when we would go on trips.
Oh, but
he'd sit there and talk to truckers the whole way to Florida and the whole way back.
I know, but you don't get to do that now. You can't do that with cell phones. It's not like people have their phone number on the site. But we drove skiing one time. We used to drive up to Colorado a couple times a year. We're driving through Nebraska, and of course there's nothing but truck stops. And we had the CB on. I put the CB in there. Talk about every truck stop meeting up with, shall we say, a new girlfriend. This was all over the CBs. What color is your truck? I'll be there. How long? I'm 45 minutes out. I'll be there. Okay. Have you stopped at a Waffle House yet?
I have not stopped at a Waffle House. I kept threatening to make my oldest go eat at one.
You know what?
I love the Waffle House. Unless you sit on the counter, because I've been to the Waffle House 3 times, and 2 of the 3 times I was sitting on the counter and someone started washing dishes and splattered dish soap all over my plate while I was eating.
That's not good.
Oh my God.
That's not what you want. It happened 2 times at 2 different Waffle Houses.
I bet the waffles, I've been there once. I thought the waffles were delicious.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's for what it is, it's great.
It's a slice of Americana.
Yes.
But you
don't want the dirty dish soap water splashing on your plate while you're eating, though.
But back to your Walmart thing, Russ. I'm not a huge Walmart goer, but long story. Audrey has a friend that was carless for a while, so I would, being the guy that I am, she'd like to go to this Walmart, and we'd go to a couple different ones, and that's been a problem for Walmart for like a real long time now. I mean, like a year or two, that they have, empty shelves. I mean, that they couldn't get this, they couldn't get that. But I think that there is a supply chain issue. I mean, when the series opened across the street, you know what a series is. I was talking to the guy who runs it, and he said, and the menu is, even on the booze, is very short, and they didn't have any Pepsi. And they didn't have any what's the flavored water that I buy all the time? What's the name of that stuff?
LaCroix,
they didn't have any of that. And I said, well, what's the problem? And he goes, well, they've gotten out of the habit. There's no deliveries downtown. So one of Audrey's friends I saw Saturday night, and she's in the booze business, for lack of a better term. And I said, how come these people can't get stuff? She goes, because we can't get stuff. She goes, you can't get Moët and Chandon. It's all locked up in France. You can't get this brand. You can't get that brand. She goes, we're even having trouble getting Jameson's. She goes, so what you're going to find on the menu is probably a whole bunch of, U.S. bourbons. And I said, yeah, that's what they had. I mean, she goes, yeah, it's not like, she said, we don't have anywhere near as many deliveries going downtown regularly like we used to. So that's a problem. And oh, by the way, we have some stuff we can't put on the trucks because, like, wine from France is a problem. Some brands are a problem. Some liquors coming from someplace, I mean, hard stuff, is a problem. I mean, so there's these little glitches all over the place. I don't think there's any denying that, is there? I mean, but the thing of it is, Russell, I think what you have to be careful of, and I don't have to tell you this, you're the PhD, is you have to be very careful when you have a Fed that's doing what they've been doing. You can't fall into that trap. In 1973, when you said, oh, the inflation is because of those Arabs. No, it wasn't.
Right.
That just happened to be the spot that it started. It happened to be the piece of silly putty that popped out, right? So right now, if we would have had, 4% money supply growth for the last 12 years instead of 8, now 20, the price of the shortage would have gone up a little bit, but something else would have gone down to compensate it, right? The general price level would not be going up, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, am I wrong? You're a professor.
No, you're not wrong at all. I don't think it's just transitory, which is the phrase that they like to use. I feel like there's forces on both sides that are going to result in permanent higher prices. I don't know if we're going to plateau at a much higher level or if we're going to keep trending, but the first day that you go to an economics class, it's all about supply and demand. And, if demand is increasing and we're having some supply issues at the same time, that's going to give you inflation. And put a bunch of extra cash floating around on top of that, it's going to give you even more inflation.
Well, yeah, that's right. And I don't.
But if we end up having to stay home for 2 or 3 months again, I think that would probably be a little bit deflationary.
Well, the M2 money supply is up from 2000. Right, in 2000 it was, I'll be nice and say 5 trillion. It's now over 20. All right, so it's up.
So everything should cost 4 times as much.
Well, if production has doubled, right, and the money supply has gone up 4, then it should be up 2 times as much. And I'm going to say that production has not gone up 5 times since 2000 of actual goods and services. Of you, would you?
Probably not.
So that's just going to happen. It's an identity. It's you can't get away from it. Even though Paul seems to think that if you don't look at it, you can get away from it, right? So if you don't look at your grass, does that mean it doesn't grow high enough to where it needs to be mowed? Is that the
That's what I do when I was in my 20s. If I didn't look at the bills as they piled up, then I never worried about paying them.
Right.
I like it.
But
just don't look at them.
But you weren't the Fed chair.
True.
Just saying. So what's going on in the schools? Is Indiana still on the full Labor Day start?
I am sitting in my professor office.
Oh, nice. In Bloomington?
And we're here. I have to, when I'm in the public areas, I have to wear a mask right now. Half the time that I get and go to the bathroom, I forget to put my mask on.
Now, are you at the Indianapolis campus, or are you in Bloomington?
I'm at the Indianapolis campus.
Is that where the MBA school is?
It's split. There's two separate, some of the things are separate and some of the things are combined. But what it really just comes down to is the Kelley School of Business. It's at both places.
Right. So if I'm a
like Indiana, and I'm going to teach six. I'm going to teach 7 classes this school year. At least that's what's planned. 5 of them are for Bloomington MBA courses, and 2 of them are undergraduate classes at the IUPUI campus.
IUPUI is Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Right. So if I'm a full time student in Indianapolis, can I do my entire MBA without having to go to Bloomington?
You can do it through what's called Kelley Direct, which is the online MBA program here.
What about like the night class for people that are working in the executive program? Is that all in Indianapolis?
You can do that. You can do that here. And then there's a full-time MBA that you can do down in Bloomington as well. There are a ton more programs and we're next to the Indiana University Hospital. So we have like a healthcare-oriented MBA that I'm teaching a couple classes for that. I'm teaching a bunch of Kelley Direct classes, and I'm teaching regular undergraduate classes as well.
When I went to MBA school, the University of Chicago, that I think everybody knows, at that time, the only MBA program, I'm going to say in the country, maybe the world, that had a hospital concentrate was the University of Chicago. Now, I'm guessing a real lot of good places, like obviously where you are, have that.
Loyola has... several healthcare focused business degrees.
Because
they've got the big hospital.
You actually could get an MBA with a hospital. It would somehow on the degree it said hospitalization, like it would, accounting concentrate or something. And at the time there was only one school that offered one that had a hotel major. Where do you suppose that was?
Where was that?
UNLV. Oh. University of Las Vegas. Nevada, Las Vegas. They were the only one that had a...
Yep.
If you wanted to be a guy that, was going to show up at Hilton saying you got an MBA in hotel management, you had to go to the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And obviously,
They have that at Memphis now. They actually have a Holiday Inn on campus.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's...
Mostly run by students.
So now you don't have...
And Holiday Inn, the old Holiday Inns when it was... And completely independent by itself was based in Memphis.
Okay. I'm saying these concentrate, they used to be very selective, the places that had them, and now they're not. There are places you can go, a lot of places, and get the stuff. So
yeah,
it's a good thing. I mean, what is the drive time? I mean, what's the commute? If you have to go to Bloomington and teach a class, how far is that?
Oh, it's about an hour right now. Oh, so and I say horrible. Right now because they're in the process of building out I-69, which is running from Indianapolis all the way down to the Mexico border. It also goes through Memphis. But it's gonna make the drive to Bloomington much shorter whenever that gets done. Okay. People keep stealing the I-69 signs. I don't understand why.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
God. What was the road that kept stealing the signs because it's the temperature that marijuana burns at or something? What's the
420?
Yeah, that road they kept stealing 420.
So that's the police code for marijuana.
Yeah, well, they also people wanted to steal the signs for their house if they rented a hooch. It was a big deal. But so you like it down there?
Yeah. No, everybody's extremely nice. I've yet to get into the classroom, but I'm sure the students are going to be great. My first quarter is in the Kelly Direct MBA program, and it was one of the first ones. Indiana was like the first top 20 business school to offer online classes, so they were ahead of the curve on it. I guess we were ahead of the curve on it. And we've been the number one online MBA year after year after year, with the exception of a couple of years, and I'm not going to say what school, but another school for a couple of years came in first, and we were in second, and then they did a little investigation and found out that other school was lying about some of their statistics.
Ah.
And the administrator that was doing it, I think, did jail time for fraud.
Well, we don't want to have to have you calling from jail.
No, I wouldn't last very long in jail.
All right, I have an academic question. People probably not interested at all, but at the University of Chicago, they were adamant that you would take 20 courses. Right? That was, you know, there was no backing off on that. Where my younger brother went to DePaul, and he already had his CPA and everything, because he was working at the time, and he was far along. So he. At DePaul, they didn't make him take any of the accounting courses because we pretty much already had them. And I think he only had to take like 12 or 14 courses. In other words, he didn't have to take, they didn't let him out of the accounting courses. They let him out of the number of courses that he would have had to take in accounting. University of Chicago, they didn't do anything like that. So I passed out of two or three of them because of economics, which meant that instead of 12 courses that I had to take in the MBA area, I only had to take 9, but I still had to take the other 11 someplace. I mean, I guess I could have taken them in the law school if I wanted to, but I ended up taking virtually all of those in the economics school, and that's how I ended up with George Stigler and Milton Fried, because all those guys were in the MBA school. So my question is, how does yours work? If somebody in town, I'm sure he has some kind of an elective, if he wants to take the elective, first of all, can he take it? If he wanted to take it in the economics school and go hear some terrific guy down in Bloomington, he's going to have to get in his car and drive down there, right, to take that class?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way it's set up?
Or you're getting in, like I told you, there are a bunch of programs, and I think there's about 8,000 students across all the different programs, and I've been here 3 days.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but you're a professor.
They keep throwing acronyms out at me and stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I'm scribbling them down. Okay, I gotta look that up later. So I'm still getting acclimated here for sure.
Maddie, other than checking out Ginger and Marianne when you watch Gilligan's Island, did the professor ever get stumped?
Well, in his mind, he didn't.
Yes, in his mind.
Aiden, I think he was a bit clueless in some cases there.
Well, we would never accuse you of that, you know.
No, I walk around. I don't realize what's going on around me.
I will say this. I'm going to say this. How can I do this politically correctly, Manny? Since you grew up in Memphis, you're probably a little more comfortable with the Indiana resident that grew up below I-80 than maybe some of us would be.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can understand what they're saying.
Manny, did I blow the political correctness on that one? Just say it.
Oh, good God. When I take my poor wife to a Rhodes family reunion down in Louisiana, I basically am acting as an interpreter.
Oh, it's got to be horrid.
But, and it's both ways, because she sounds like she, well, I think you had her on once to talk about vaccines or something. Yeah, so I mean, she sounds like she's from Chicago.
Oh yeah, she has has the thick Midwest Chicago thing going, and I bet in the Bayou she probably sounds like a foreigner.
It's really. I remember the first time I took her down there, we were on a back highway, and we had to stop at basically a general store to get gas and stuff. There was a big crash on one of the expressways, so we were zigzagging our way around it, and a kid came in with a fish in his fishing jacket.
Oh my.
And started talking to the guy behind the counter, and he had a fish. I mean, basically, he had caught a fish, and he was there to pick up some ice to keep the fish fresh before, so we can have it for dinner tonight. And I could barely understand what he was saying, and she was just blown away by that one.
I found people from Ohio and out east. I mean, the Boston people when there's consonants they can't pronounce. Hockey cat,
uh-huh. Or they add R's to all the A vowels.
Well, they can't say R. Everything's a pa.
No, but then then they'll add R to like I saw her.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So they can say R. They just say it in weird times.
Well, people in Columbus
they find
you can't.
It in the wrong place.
Right.
Well, the people in Columbus you can't understand a word they're saying either. And these are just my family.
I don't think I've ever talked to anybody from Columbus.
Well, they all sound like Woody Hayes. I mean, you can barely understand Woody. But, so when we come back from break here, we talk about these CPI numbers, and I think this could be a big day. We'll see if they hide them or what they do, but we better go to break early, Maddie, because they're coming out in a second. S&P Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures down 29. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. This is from Matt Weber. We got S&P Consumer Price Index is up 5.4% in July from year over year, with a 0.5% on the month. And I'm going to say, is that a fair assessment, Manny? I don't. We'll get to that in a second. But anyway,
I think you were going to say that no matter what the number was.
Well, it's been that way for so long that I can't even get there. I mean, I don't even. For two reasons. One, we've had a 25% increase in housing prices this year. Not only is that not reflected, you would think that if your rent went up 25%, Maddie, not only would the rent go up, but it would be a bigger piece of the money you spend every month for everything, right? It would be a higher percentage of your basket, right? Since now it's up 25%. Well, they didn't move that either. So, I mean, how do you not do that? I mean, just whatever. S&P futures up 4, NASDAQ futures up 21. Dow futures up 2. We got individual stocks not really doing too much. We got the Caterpillar up $1.43. Goldman Sachs up $1. So probably the Dow futures are actually up more than that. This one's on a delay. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 3. Call that flat. FTSE up 31.4%. CAC around up 20.3%. Asia, we've got Nikkei up 182.6. Shanghai up 2.08. Hang Seng up 54.2. Bonds. We've got the 10-year is 1.36, so it's sneaking up. The Bund sneaking up as well, but still minus 0.44. That's up 1 basis point. The Japanese up, we're up 2 basis points to 0.04. We've got oil down $1.41 now, 2%, 66.88, as the Biden administration says OPEC should pop out some more oil at a less price because the world needs it. It's really support the economic recovery is the exact phrase. Brent down 137, 69.26. Natural gas down 6 cents, 402. And just so you know that I'm fair, I'm going to say somebody in the White House traded on this news, just like people in the Trump White House traded on all his out peeps. Just the way I am. Suspicious. RBOB down 4 cents, 222. We got gold is up 490, 1736, an old big move. Silver down 2 cents, 2336. Copper down 2 cents, 433. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, and sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still pretty decent out there for a Wednesday morning on the Edens and Kennedy. Traffic building steadily on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. We did have an earlier crash on the I-294 Tri-State down on the south side. That is very red. The crash has been clear, but a lot of traffic on I-294. That's probably our slowest moving expressway right now. Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking good. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, we have a crash out west, US 20 on the eastbound side before Shales Parkway. There's an accident on the left shoulder, so expect delays out there on Highway 20. And then there's all kinds of flashing traffic lights and fallen power cables out in the western suburbs due to last night's storms. I'm not going to read all of those, but there's a lot of that. Down trees on roadways, downed power cables, and flashing traffic lights. Only other crashes, though, in the area are up north. Belvedere Road between Fairfield and Cedar Lake is closed due to a crash. And then east of there, we have an accident on US 41 at Washington Street. That's up in Waukegan. Weather today, another hot and steamy summer day today. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 90. Right now, it is mostly clear and 77 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast and a high of 95 today. Right now, it's clear and 82. In sports, White Sox lost up in Minnesota to the Twins 4-3. Cubs were swept at home in a day-night doubleheader by the Brewers, losing Game 1 4-2 and then the nightcap 6-3. Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 8-7. And as we talked briefly last hour, Blackhawks legend and Hall of Fame goalie Tony Esposito passed away from pancreatic cancer. He was 78. Chief.
I got a good something here that'll make Russell happy. I'm looking at the CPI numbers, and although men's pants and shorts are up 11% on the year, men's sweaters are only up 1%.
Oh, very nice.
Woo!
Yep. we have women's dresses up 18.9%, even though they were down 1% last month. And so he's in. Let's see. What do we got here? New cars and new trucks. All you got to do is read this stuff, and you feel like reaching for the, I was going to say air sickness bag, the barf bag. New trucks. What do you think they are up year over year?
17%.
How about 6.8?
Oh.
According to your government. New cars, 5.7.
In reality, they've got to be at least 50% up, right? If not more.
Well, the new cars are probably up a solid 10 or 15, easy, if you can find one.
You just repeated the phrase I was going to say, if you can find one.
Well, so there's...
I'm thinking about flipping my car.
Yeah.
You're not alone. I think a lot of people are thinking
about it. I basically am going to live across the street from campus here.
Well, let's put it this way.
I don't need a car in Chicago anymore, so...
If I had my old red pickup that I sold 8 years ago for $5,500, it's now worth probably $14. It's not worth it. Some guy might pay for it. That thing would have sales. There would be so many for sale signs, he wouldn't be able to see the truck. Just saying. Of course, everything has. Now, if you're in the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and again, if you're going to criticize people, you got to. And I'm not criticizing any individual, but if you're going to criticize people, you've got to tell somewhat of the whole story. Now, what would you do, Russell, being the intelligent fellow that you are? Now, you've got three variables here, correct? You've got the list price, which is published everywhere, of cars, trucks, and whatever, correct? There's four values. There's the list price this year versus last year. There's also any improvements to the vehicle that were an option last year that aren't this year. Although nothing's been an option for so long, I can't believe it. But say, for instance, this year there's a backup camera in the truck where it wasn't last year. So, and that thing's worth $300. Well, if the list price is $300 up, you're going to call that even though a truck's a truck. I mean, in terms of, let's say we let that one go. So there's the list price last year plus the improvements. Right now there's going to be the retail price, which now gets a little sketchy because now it sort of depends on the dealer, depends on this thing, other thing. So the retail price, I'm going to say that BLS has no clue about, right? It doesn't care. So
people probably are not negotiating better prices than they were able to in the past.
Well, right. So now, actually heard someplace that if you have the right truck, you're getting over a list. So say a truck used to be 50, the retail price would be what, 42? 43. Mm-hmm. So now there's really $8,000 here where the price to you could go up without the BLS having a vibrator, vibrate on them or something. I mean, they're not even going to, if all of a sudden now you have to walk in and, I only got one truck, so it's 49, take it or leave it. Or by the way, you got to buy a bed liner for another $2,000 in order to get the thing. They're not going to pick that up at all. So all the stuff that we as consumers end up getting nailed for if things become sort of scarce or because the prices go up, I don't think they're not designed to pick any of that stuff. And it's not a criticism. I'm just saying that you miss a lot.
Go ahead. It's hard.
It's hard.
I'm sitting here as you're talking about that. Just throwing my academic brain into it. I'm like, I wonder if there's somewhere I could find the average car sale price versus the sticker price, in what environment are people negotiating better than in other environments? Problem is all the car dealerships are typically private companies and they're not going to share that data with you. But that would be a fascinating thing to look at. How much, just kind of a measure of consumer power or pricing power. Based on one of the few things that's still negotiated back and forth a little bit at least, where people, make the offer and all of that.
Right. So now, does anybody believe prescription drugs are down 2.5% on the year, and it's only 1% of people's baskets? God, if you know somebody over 65, it's got to be what? What do you think the average piece of their basket is?
Oh, it's probably 10, easy.
Yeah,
10%.
All right, so it's minus 1.9. Now, I'm going to say that has to do totally with, was it Lipitor and a couple other things came off patent, right?
Oh, that's got it. Absolutely.
I mean, there's no way that any drug that hasn't come off patent went down in price last year. I mean, maybe there might be a few.
Yeah.
But
I'm sitting here thinking about the demographics, and I know this is going to sound very cold and heartless, but COVID did hit disproportionately bigger consumers of drugs.
Okay.
So that may have resulted in lower demand.
All right.
I just don't even like saying that because you hate being clinical with increased death.
Right.
You know, but that really, I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of the issue right there. It's just that, you know, you hear about, you know, when, you know, half a nursing home gets wiped out because of COVID, that's suddenly a lot less demand for drugs.
Rent of primary residence, which is the implied price of a home, 1.9% in the year? Really? Really? With the price of houses up 25%?
Renting is cheap. I've been monitoring rents down here in Indianapolis because I had to get a place. And over the last 3 or 4 months, they seem to have fallen off. And I actually, like, I'll just go to a website and then they're bugging the crap out of me about whether or not I'd like to move in. And I wonder if, you know, as people's leases came up and you were still working from home, did you decide to maybe move back home with mom and dad? I know a couple of recent Loyola graduates that did that. Like, I'm not going to sit here in an apartment completely by myself all the time. So I wonder if there's an increase in the supply of rental units.
Well, I'm sure there are in downtown Chicago.
Now, oh, I know there are. My office at Loyola, my office at Loyola basically backed up to a pretty large apartment building, and I could see. Yeah, you can look over and you can see into, I don't know, let's say just 12 units. They were all full when everything was normal. They were complete. Every single one of them was empty.
Yeah,
it looked like I was looking into a new construction.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, But I mean, I think that the you can see the way this thing goes up and down here. Domestic services is up 11%. Moving and storage is up 13%. Medical care services is up 0.8%. I mean, in my opinion, you just can't be accurate. Looking at the medical care? I mean, you can't be 7% of the CPI can't be medicine when it's 20% of the economy. I mean, and when you have the equivalent rent of here's owner equivalent rent of primary residence, 22%. I'd love to be able to have the people I know and myself buy a house, and my mortgage is 22% of my salary. I mean, boy, oh boy, how many people you know make five times their mortgage?
Not, I mean,
you might. I'm saying, but it's.
I've been actually thinking about buying down here too, so I kind of have an idea of what the mortgages would be, and I'm trying to do the math real quick.
How many
people make five times more? I think a lot of people do.
I mean, what's the even with this interest rate? What's the mortgage on the median home now is now $335. All right, so
it's funny. I looked at something that was almost that exact price, and if I put 20% down, it was $1,900 a month.
Okay, so how many people?
I know that number off the top of my head. I was playing with the mortgage calculator yesterday.
Okay, so that's the interest rate's very low, and which mm-hmm. is nice. So say $2,000. I got news for you. The median income is not $10,000 a month. It's not $120,000 a year. It's more like $37,000 a year, mm-hmm. or maybe say $40,000 now. So it's a third of what these people say the basket is for pretty average person.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that, Russell? And been put out to
play? I heard a really interesting way to gauge how expensive housing has become relative to everything else. Back when we had the baby boomers and everybody came back from World War II, the cost of a house was about the same as the cost of a couple of cars.
Yeah.
Like, in fact, and now, you know, the average cost of a house is $335?
Yeah, the median, not average, the median.
Yeah, if you've got a couple of cars that sum up to $300,000, you're not living in a $300,000 house.
Well, I think the
or if you are, you really got screwed up for screwed up priority.
Well, the,
but
you know, let me see if I can go to my debt clock here and find out what the median wage was.
The median household income right now is $63,000.
Household.
The median individual income right now is just over $31,000, which is very small.
Where are you getting that?
Google.
All right, I think you're...
Internet.
The very top... I mean, it comes right up. The individual is $31,000 for median income, but the household is just under $63,000. It's $62,843.
All right, I'm looking...
And you got to figure the higher numbers are, you know... dual earning households that probably do live in a house.
Yeah, this is from the U.S. Census Bureau.
Okay, well, I don't normally give you grief to the wrong side here, but I'm looking at the debtclack.org, and they've got a median income at now at like 36.
So they're saying it's higher.
Yeah.
The U.S. Census Bureau, which I would say is the real number, or at least it's the published number. I don't know if they're telling the truth or not. But, yeah, they have it at just over 31, and then the household at just under 63. Now, that said, the last published edition was just prior to COVID. So, you know, in the last 18 months, I guess it could be different. But the
reason why I'm questioning you a tad is because...
Don't question me. Question the U.S. Census Bureau.
What I'm questioning is these guys have the median income in 2000 at 31, and now they got it at 36. So I'm wondering if the page you're grabbing isn't somehow picking up the 2000 number.
Here, so they have a chart. The U.S. Census Bureau has a chart that goes back to 2011. Now I can go back further. Okay. 2011, it says 26.5. 2013, still 26.5. 2016, it goes to 27.5. 2018, 30. And then 2019 is right before COVID was when it was last published. It's 31.133.
All right, maybe, I mean, it's not...
But either way, I mean, we're close.
Right, because my... The reason why I never used to do this, man, I used to take... First of all, the family number... has to be higher than the individual number. It has to be more than double.
Which it is. Yeah, it goes 31 to 63.
Right, okay. All right, well, so what Russell's talking about, right next to each other on this page, and it's I guess everything is relative. And I've got, let's use my numbers, just for laughs. Let's use a 31,000 in 2000. You got what in 2000? You just go back to 2000?
It goes to 2010, and it was 26.5 in 2010.
Wow, okay. Well, let's use the 31,000. It's bad enough. Let's put it that way. The 31,000 in 2000, the median home was 165. So it's 5.5 times median income, right? So now in 2000 and wherever we are, 2021, I've got median income at 36, and the median home, new home, they've got it at 358. So now the home is 10 times. And I'm going to say that in 1977, 78, when I was working at Pullman, Matt, if you get something back that far, I'm going to say those guys, and this wasn't median, of course, but those guys in a good production job, a welder, something like that, I'm going to say they could make 18 to 20, maybe a little overtime.
Median income in 1975 was $13,700.
All right, and the price of a new home was, I'm going to say, 45. Median, maybe less. So it was maybe double or triple 1 year's pay.
Yeah.
Which, and now we're up to 10 times. So what Russell, we're proving out your stuff. We're like your lackeys that are the PhD students or something.
Mm-hmm. I'm letting the classroom work through the problem.
Now, are you going to get, lackey's a bad term. Are you going to have some assistance down there that if you decide you want some research done, they say, how high, sir, and run and do it?
Heck yeah!
Well, good.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I have a little slush fund that I can use to pay students to help me with things. There are all kinds of benefits of being in a really big school.
I'm going to say, Russell, one week that we won't take the whole thing. We'll bore the hell out of people. Let's take 10 minutes and just list, and maybe we'll have some people tweet in or call in. This could be fun. Name, based on the COVID, based on the economics that are totally, I'll use a Pullman term, totally kittywampus, off the chart, strange. I'll bet we can name 10 serious PhD theses that need to get done on research of the last 2 years.
Okay. The COVID stuff, there's this organization, the National Bureau of Economic Research, where they really have all the top researchers, and they send out a monthly summary of what working papers are out there. There have been a lot of working papers on COVID over the past year. Either June or July was the first month that there were no new working papers looking at COVID. And in the most recent one, there are a couple of people looking at it again. It's almost like it started to go away. I think we all thought we were out of the woods with this thing, and people stopped researching it. And then the Delta variant comes up, and there's a couple of papers on COVID again.
Wow, what are they saying? I mean, anything worthwhile?
Just trying to balance out. Nothing that has gotten me really, wow, that's a really good thought there. Just a lot of looking at, again, the supply and demand dynamics of the economy and the impact of it, the impact of making us all stay home.
I wanted to ask Russell, because you were recently spent time in Florida, obviously, on your road trip. So if you listen to the news media or you follow along on Twitter, everyone is just going crazy about Florida and how it's a hot spot right now for COVID cases with the Delta variant. And like yesterday, there were 65,000 cases or something crazy like that in the state of Florida, and people are dying. And obviously, it's a relatively low vaccination rate there compared to some other states. Yet, like, we were talking to Kenny Polcari off the air and some other contributors that live down in Florida, and they were like, you wouldn't have any idea that's going on unless you watch the news 24 hours a day. Like, he said, it's just business as usual there. Everything's open. Everyone's relaxed. He's not seeing anyone sick. So, I mean, which is it? Did you pick up on anything?
You would not think that they had ever had COVID down there.
Really?
I would totally agree. I mean, it wasn't like, a bunch of, not a lot of panic. Everybody was just living their life and pretty normally. And I'm trying to think, I rarely saw people wearing masks. Like when I went to the Walmart, I rarely saw people wearing masks.
It really makes you wonder, I don't think the news media is lying. I'm sure those case numbers are true. I don't think they're making them up. But it's. I feel like up here it spins people into terror, and down there no one cares.
Well, Manny,
which is the right way? I don't know.
Well, Manny, let me ask you though. When we were reporting on the show, the big second wave in Illinois, Chicago had already had their problems with COVID last a year ago, March, April, May. I mean, so many people up here had it. I think you and I both.
No, that's everywhere though. If you look at the charts, it spiked in April, May, then it went down, then it spiked again in October, November, then it went down, and now it's spiking again.
Okay,
it did that everywhere.
All right, but that's the question I'm asking. The state numbers, it did that everywhere, but here in Chicago, the spike the second time was in Peoria or Rockford. That didn't affect us at all. We were business as usual.
It affected us from a policy standpoint.
Well,
big
from
time.
The state, yeah.
Oh yeah,
from the state. But I'm saying it didn't affect.
We essentially shut down again.
Right, but I think Florida's having the same issue. It's in areas where it kind of wasn't before.
That could be the
central part of the state. Hey Russell, we've talked, well, because we have Kevin and some people that are really into it. And by the way, it's big news, not just because they're into it. What percent, all this, these supply chain issues and the shortages and the Walmart and the liquor and everything else, what percentage of that, if you had a guess, and I'm not going to go back to the politics on this, although if you look at the politics and the issues of the last, let's say, pushing 10 years now, with the stuff in China, with things like that, with us, the first of the tariffs, and by the way, we weren't going to let this and that. And by the way, and I agreed with a lot of that, because I'm not sure we want to keep doing the same relationship we had with China. What percentage of the stuff now that everybody's blaming totally on COVID was kind of already in place, that we had port issues when Trump dropped the tariffs after there were tariffs, right? All of a sudden everybody tried to catch up on the port. It wasn't like the port issues started with COVID. I'm trying to put a percentage on what percentage you think the problems now are COVID, or are still remainders from, let's say, policies before that I may have agreed with.
You got to figure it'd be very difficult to put a percentage on that, but you got to figure it's part of the issue. It most definitely is part of the supply issue. And Biden really hasn't reversed much that Trump implemented relative to China, which is kind of nice to see. I think there was a big assumption that we would just go back to status quo with China, and we're not. And I think that's going to be another contributing factor to inflation. I feel like the Chinese economy is just teetering on being over leveraged, and kind of like a company that's over leveraged and has to shut down for a month. Next thing you know, they're going to be declaring bankruptcy. I'm really worried about a financial crisis coming out of China.
What is it? We only have like 2 seconds here, but are all the punitive tariffs gone, or are there some still around from China? I don't even know.
I think some are still around.
Okay, maybe that's a question we'll ask. We'll ask Carl that. He'll know. Russell, thank you very much, buddy. Enjoy yourself down there. SP futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 41. Again, the CPI number was 0.5 for the month, 5.4% year over year. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-